So one of the other things you mentioned, smart client, obviously, smart's a loaded word. Right? Yeah. To me, if something is smart, it's not just because it runs on my desktop and uses the horsepower of my PC. Yeah. It actually has smartness in the sense that it knows when I'm connected.
Yeah.
It knows when to go out and asynchronously sync my data.
Yeah.
All of that stuff relatively for free.
Yeah.
So one of the things I remember, because I started up in the client world as well, yeah. was the absolute pain it is to write reliable network detection, internet detection, using Win32 and
yeah.
APIs that were given to us. So in WIDBI, or perhaps in the 3.0 time frame, is there going to be some sort of canned
control
that I can use?
There's the system.net guys.
Yes.
And have they're the guys who produce HTTP requests and
sure,
web
sure.
clients. They've and I can't remember what it's called, network information, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
They have a class that's there. You can go and hook an event on it. It tells you when you're connected to the network, when you're disconnected.
It does.
Yeah.
Reliably, as reliable as I can be.
In all the experiments I have used it, I've used it in quite a few demos, and so has Joe Stegman, who's another
good. They didn't just wrap internet get connected state. Hopefully,
I hope not, because I have the same experience with you
yeah.
with that. In that it isn't very reliable.
It's not. I mean, the only reliable way to do it is to generate network traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, but one of these days, I know there's a group that's working on presence detection.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they're called, but it's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's in WIDBI, so we're probably going to have to cut this out of this. But yeah. anyway, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So in other words, smarts, I know when you're connected, I know
yeah.
when you're not, I know
yeah.
when you've been bad, I know you've been
yeah.
good, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
And we get that for free in WinForms. So
so you get the network connectivity for free. I mean, what I'd say is, that every release, we do a better job of making something easy.
Good.
So, I'm sorry, that was a terrible way to put that, wasn't it? Good grief, what a disgusting truism. We wouldn't sell product if we didn't do that. But,
I'm running this all, man.
You can keep that in. Anybody
I don't
know.
Get it. You forget I'm the lazy video guy. I don't do any editing.
Anybody who knows me knows I make an idiot of myself every time I open my mouth, so if you put it there. But what I was trying to say was, one of the things that used to be really hard was deploying applications.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the thing that was stopping you building client applications. The reason people moved to building web applications.
Mm-hmm.
Not because anybody thought building web applications was better. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew for the most part it was worse. It's just there was this big problem, and the only way to solve the big problem was to go over here. And so we started to solve that problem in V1 with the work we did around versioning and app isolation, and then we really nailed it with QuickWords. So now we've got you to the point where you don't have to worry about how you're going to deploy or update your application anymore. So now you can start worrying about the next hard problem and the next hard problem and the next hard problem. So QuickWords is a thing we've solved in this version. I hope that I would hope that in the next version of the product, we make some of the things like managing offline data and caching persistent data and how do I deal with if I have a big chunk of read-only, not updating very often data, like a product catalog or something like that, how do I deal with all of those things? Because today you still have to write a chunk of code to make those work. I mean, there are things that the application guys we've written help with that, so they're like an offline data block and so on and so forth, which help customers build those kind of things for themselves. So one of the things we want to tackle we're thinking about tackling in the next version of the product, we'd really like to sort of just nail those things and make that next set of things as easy as QuickWords.
So now you've made it easier to deploy with QuickWords.
Yeah.
You still need to have a framework on the machine.
Yes.
So a question that is there any plans to consider componentizing? So there's only, I mean, obviously there's a number of DLLs you need to be able to run managed code, but you certainly don't need all of the libraries.
So we looked at that.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at it several times, in fact. And,
okay.
and what we found is that we actually, there are so many pieces of the framework that you end up using, and it's difficult for us to predict what the set of pieces that you use are.
Mm-hmm.
The substating the framework like that to build like a, one of the things we investigated was building a client redis, and we found that the client version of the redis actually wasn't smaller than the overall redis, and the size difference didn't justify the cost in terms of us having to create two redis and the cost in terms of customers having to manage to a client and a server redis or and servicing it. So we ended up deciding it was one thing, and that was probably the simplest thing for us and our customers. And frankly, I'd like there to be a new magic compression technology that got that down to like a meg and a half. I don't.
Or even something like with Office, you have the intelligence. Another reason why it's a very good, Office is a smart client, obviously, is that when it needs to use a component that it knows it doesn't have, it goes ahead and gets it.
So you can do that with Qlik once, but you just can't do that with the framework itself.
Fair enough.
So, it's always a problem, we'll face the same thing with the framework, is how do we get it out there to all those machines? But if you look at the V1 and V11 framework, they're pretty widely distributed.
Absolutely.
I just bought my daughter a new laptop computer for college, and it came with a framework installed on it. The HP software that I was talking about earlier uses a .NET framework, so everybody who installs the HP printer drivers and the photo management software that comes with them, that has a .NET framework installed. So I can't remember what the numbers are for framework installs, but it's very large percentages of computers now have the framework installed.
Well,
so
it's going to be less and less of a problem.
Yeah, for sure.
Since you meet so many customers at conferences, what are the biggest mistakes you see people making when using Windows Forms? And feel free to use a whiteboard.
I guess the biggest single thing I see people having problems with is dealing with multi-threading of Windows Forms. Well, where if you kick off some background process to do something, like you call a web service asynchronously, or you're going to go off and read a set of files and you create a second thread to do that, is then communicating back to the UI thread, because you're not allowed to call Windows Forms controls directly from arbitrary threads, because they're not MTA Windows Forms, because Windows is STA. That's single-threaded department, which means that basically if you want to talk to the controller, you have to marshal the call back to the thread the control was created on and then talk to it there. So the way you do that is to use control.beginning. And so one of the things that you see is like people use a web service and they pass in a completion delegate, and the completion delegate is invoked when the web service completes, and that happens on an arbitrary thread on the thread pool, and then people try and talk directly back to their Windows Forms controls. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and typically the time when it doesn't work is in production, and you just get some bizarre behaviour in one of our controls. And so we've actually done a chunk of working with Beta to make that easier. So we have an event-based async model where now if you look at the web service proxy, it generates an event when it completes, and the event fires on the UI thread. And we built an infrastructure underneath that so third parties can use it as well. And so that's the if I had a cent for every time somebody had problems with that, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now. I'd be in the Bahamas.
Okay. Any other things that you see?
Another one is, I'm just pulling random things in. And this is
what,
my
fault. That's what Channel 9 is all about, is random.
I will use the whiteboard.
All right.
So one of the things we did in Windows Forms to try and make things easier was we have this thing called, this is data binding. We have, which is another area we've done loads and loads of really good improvements. It would be, again, that's
Joe Stoneman, who's been driving that on our team, has made a great job of that. So we have this thing called the currency manager. And this is not about managing changing dollars to pounds or to yen or whatever. This is about managing the current item in a list. So let's say I have some form where here I'm going to display customers and here I'm going to display orders for the selected customer. As you change the customer here, the orders that are changed are displayed. And the way this works is, under the covers, we create this thing called a currency manager for the data source, data member pair. So let's say I'm bound to dataset one, customers here. We create a currency manager for that. That fires change events as you change the current item in this list. This thing here also has a currency manager. And if anybody can understand my writing, then I'll be very surprised. And this currency manager is linked to this one. And this one listens to this one's change events, and so as you change here, this goes, oh, I need to go refetch my list of orders, and it goes and refetches the list of orders. Well, we kind of hide all of this under the covers to make life easier. So here, well, all I have to do is I just have to set the data source to be my data set, and the data member to be, you know, customers or whatever. And I don't have to worry about these currency manager thingies. But what that means is that when I when I get to the point where I want to use a currency manager because I want to track what the current position is, or I want to go and get the current item to do some work on it or whatever, I have to look it up, and I have to go to the binding context. Me in this case is the form. I have to go to the binding context, and then I have to index into that, and I have to say data source, comma, data member. And so this gives me back the currency manager, and then I can, from there, I can get the current item or the position or whatever. Now the tricky part of all of this is that the data source data member here are keys into the collection of currency managers on the binding context, which means that, for example, if I have a data set that has a customers table. Yeah. Logically, dataset1.customers gives you back the same should give you back the same object here as passing in dataset1, comma, customers into the binding context. But in fact, because of because this is what you pass in here is a key, this actually results in two different currency managers being returned. Mm-hmm. And so what you see is, because of this, you see people thinking, well, logically, because the end object I'm bound to is the same, it doesn't matter what I pass into here, I'm going to get back that same thing, and you don't. You actually get back two different things. Mm-hmm. And so people then go, well, I'm changing the current item here, but I'm not saying that. And so we've seen people get into trouble with that. So that's this is totally my fault. Mea culpa for this one. What an appalling piece of design. But we're fixing it in Whippy as well. We have this thing called a binding source, which hides all of this nastiness and makes it much nicer, thanks to you.
Cool. This is really now, what about, I know, having done work with WinForms in 1.1 there was some issues with redraw. Have there been work done with maybe dealing with flickering? I know you have a flow panel now or something like that.
Well,
you auto resizing.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think of a specific example.
Just bad programming.
Yeah.
On my part.
I hesitate to say that.
You can say he's not a good person. Charles could take it.
Sure.
Yeah, but then he'll give me a bad write-up on Chuddle, though.
I'll
my head up in a conference.
Your mouth will just be moving.
Yeah, that's right. And then I did say, yeah. So, I'm just trying to think if we've done any specific improvements in that area. We've done a stack of general performance improvements around our paving performance.
Okay.
I know Sean Burke, who's the dev manager for the Windows Forms team, was doing some work on that before Christmas, and from what I recall, we got some pretty dramatic improvements out of that. So hopefully you'll see less flicker. I mean, sometimes it's just you'll be using a Win32 controller. Frankly, wasn't designed to be used like that, and you'll see it flicker. Sometimes it's because you have to be careful about only repainting DLSS. So going back to what you were saying about kind of classic mistakes people make, and I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form this was what you did. When you write controls and you're doing drawing, one of the things you have to be really careful about is redrawing the absolute minimum you have to. So one of the things I've seen, I was looking at a control that somebody wrote in November, and it flickered when you moved a window across the top of it. It flickered really badly, and I was like looking at it going, good grief, well, I was thinking, what have we done wrong to causes it was on one of the beta versions would be. And I was thinking, golly, we must have done something horribly wrong with this. I had a look at it, and what it actually was the way the control was written, every time you got any kind of redraw, it was refetching the data and redrawing the entire control, not just the area that was invalidated. And you can actually make an immense difference in your paint performance by being very careful by actually paying attention to the area that's being invalidated and only redrawing the area that's invalidated. So, there are brute force ways to do it. You can use double buffering, a cheap way to fix your paint performance is to use the double buffering classes we have built into Windows Forms. Sorry, double buffering is a technique where basically you draw to an off-screen bitmap and then you just copy the bitmap to video. And depending on what you're doing, it's typically quite a bit faster than just drawing directly in video.
Oh, it's an old BB tip.
Yeah. Well, it's just a Win32 thing.
Wow.
And there's a control style you can set up, controls that turn that on. And obviously the penalty you pay is you're creating a bitmap that if you've got a screen that's using 8 megabytes worth of video memory or 32 megabytes worth of video memory, you've got a bitmap that big if you're doing the whole screen, so you have to be careful about how you use it. But you can actually mask your paint performances by doing that. Yeah. But what I found is that by actually looking at the clipping region, the region that's actually been invalidated, and when you invalidate things, making sure you invalidate only the area that needs to be redrawn, you can actually get some pretty good performance. And so that's, for example, if you look at the new grid we've got in Whitby, it scrolls
that was
pretty fast.
For this, it was basically a large list items, right, that were custom painted because you wanted them to look a certain way. And when you resize the window, it would repaint, and that was just out of the box default. Yeah. I wasn't really invalidating at that point. We just took care of repainting them.
Yeah.
So when you resize now, it sounds like you have a better.
I'd have to look. To be honest, I'd have to look at that particular example to understand what was going on.
But I'm sure you made improvements in that.
Yeah, we made some pretty significant. I think we made some pretty significant.
What are beyond just, the currency manager is very important. You mentioned it's easier now for somebody who's not a master programmer, which, of course, is who we're targeting typically with .NET. Arguably, we can cut that.
I'm a BB programmer.
What I'm trying to say is, so now it's easier for somebody to write asynchronous threads.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you don't really understand even what asynchronous is initially.
Yeah.
But you understand you probably need it.
Yeah.
I've seen even certain modern applications that aren't asynchronous enough.
They should be.
They really should be.
Yeah.
Now it's easy for me to create an asynchronous thread that does work, and it's I don't have to do the old school way, which was just last year.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
How about what else? What else is going on?
So I talked about tool scripts and menu scripts.
Yeah.
I talked about the async stuff. I talked about the grid.
How about security?
How about
is it easier to do CAS? In other words, that's a whole huge part of .NET that's sort of been kind of complex.
So,
any changes there?
I'm just trying to think of the right way to put this. Just put it this way. At a fundamental level, it hasn't changed. It's still an area. The best way to deal with code access security is to never use an assert, to never do any, and to never do anything. And that way you know you're safe. It's a complex area, and once you start doing it, I mean, the area where it becomes particularly complex is where you're writing, is what we do, which is you write components that themselves run in full trust, but can be used by partial trust applications. And you have to, you really have to understand what that is. The next level is, I'm writing an application that I want to deploy across the internet or the intranet, and today it can be hard to debug those applications. So one of the things we have done in would be is to introduce a feature called debugging zone, where you can run the application from inside Visual Studio and say, I'm going to be running it inside the internet zone or the intranet zone, so use that set of permissions, and then you can actually run the application and debug it. And there are a set of helper windows that come up and say, you've got this sort of exception. Have you considered this or this? So, if you get a file IO exception, it brings up a little window which says, have you considered using isolated storage? And here's where you go to find out about isolated storage. So, from the application program perspective, we have made it easier. From the point of view of an administrator, we have made it easier in that ClickOnce has a number of features around administration of security policy that make it much easier to administer and distribute the security policy. From the point of view of the component vendor writing a full trust, the person writing a control or a component that runs in full trust but can be used by partial trust, I don't think we've really made any improvements there. I think you really have to know what you're doing. I mean, my advice would be, unless you really understand what you're doing, don't do that.
Good advice. Great advice. And I had something. There's a thread on Channel 9 about there's an MFC developer very upset with the fact that there's really no plan to evolve MFC. Yeah. But you just talked about something that I thought was an excellent point, and that Windows Forms really is an evolution of MFC plus the RAD kind of concept. It's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
Understood. It's not. Yeah, but the point is, you can still be a C++ developer, right? Manage C++ and use WinForms.
Yeah.
You have an incredible library.
Yeah. You can still get to the Win32 API. You can still.
And you can write it in C++.
Yeah, that's right.
No, pinvokes either.
That's right. I have to say, doing pinvokes from managed C++ is a heck of a lot nicer than doing it from C#.
Yeah.
It's one of the areas where
you just write native.
Yeah, you just write native. That's right.
It's beautiful.
It is.
So C++ developers out there, remember that. You can still be a Windows developer and write in C++, manage C++, but nevertheless, the next version is a good language.
Yeah, and I know one of the areas the MFC guys have invested in this product cycle is making it much easier to use Windows Forms controls inside MFC. So if you have an existing MFC app, they've made it a whole... I mean, you could do it with V1.1, but it was somewhat complex to do it, and the support's actually built into MFC now. So you can use Windows Forms as an extensibility mechanism for an existing app.
How do customers get in touch with you and tell you what they'd like to see in the next version of WinForms?
The best way to do it, I would say, is using the, what's the proper name for it? The MSDM Feedback Center. Because...
Ladybug?
Ladybug was the name I was going to use, but the proper name is
MSDM
Feedback Center. Okay. Because my responsiveness to email is typically dependent on how busy I am doing all the other stuff I have to do. And so whereas the MSDM Feedback Center is great because it kind of comes into my group and it's not just me that sees it, it's our entire team, and it gets farmed out to the person who has the most expertise in that area.
And it's in public.
Yeah.
It has a little extra.
Yeah. It's in public, and you guarantee some kind of feedback. So and he kind of loses a personal touch of, oh, I sent this guy an email and he responded to me and that was kind of nice, but it's much better than I sent that guy a piece of email and that didn't even bother to respond. Obviously I haven't seen it from the customer side, but from my side of things, it's a great way to have a form. And
I'm getting snowed the same way with email, and I like, the reason I bias toward public stuff is because if I answer it in public, then the answer is there for other people who can come by and try to report the same issue or try to give you the same kind of feedback.
Yeah. And I
people can vote on this too.
So that's right.
So it's a hot button. Everybody can say, right. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great because it gives us a way of gauging how many people have run into this problem, which, of course, in an ideal world, would fix every single problem every single customer ran into, and we'd like to do that. But of course, given the constraints of time and resources, being able to understand how many people something affects is good. So go use the feedback center, and even if you don't want to enter bugs, have a look at the stuff that's there, and if there's something there that you run into, go and vote on.
And you guys have a website. Do you have Windows Forms?
We have a windowsforms.net, and there are a set of forums on there. And I'm not active on Mac at the moment, but a chunk of the guys on my team are.
Okay.
There's the .NET listservs, which I tend to monitor. The Microsoft News Groups, I know some of the guys on my team are pretty active on the Microsoft News Groups as well. So.
Is there any books that you like?
Books
that you recommend people read for Windows Forms and
Whatever I say, somebody's going to be angry because I missed that book.
Yeah.
The Windows Forms website has a really great list of books on it,
okay.
And I there are a couple of books I do like, but there are also some books I like that I know I can't remember the names off the top of my head.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but the Windows Forms website has a pretty good list of books.
Cool. Anything else you want to tell us?
Because
two more minutes left.
I don't know. I've probably taken up enough of your time. And
your time. Thank you. Very good. And hope to see you at the PDC, right?
Showing
the latest Windows Forms.
Yeah.